A few years ago, I met with Kim, a new patient. The first thing I do during an appointment with a new patient is to take a complete history, asking about physical and psychological health, family, relationships, career, stress levels, and health habits. Then I ask the patient why she has come to see me, and together we come up with a treatment plan. Kim told me she'd been happily married for 20 years. She loved and respected her husband, Ted, and they took pleasure in each other's company. Over the years, their sex life had decreased in frequency by mutual consent, but when they did make love, both felt satisfied. Ted had always been faithful to her. Ted worked in the financial world and made a very good living. This allowed Kim to be a stay-at-home mom, which she preferred and enjoyed. They had four healthy, happy teens who were all doing well in school and participating successfully in sports and other activities. Kim volunteered at her children's schools, had many friends, and had an active and lively social life. Kim was slender and fit, ran regularly, and had recently started weight training. She did not smoke and drank socially on the weekends. She had no history of depression or anxiety and no health problems. From what I could see, she appeared to be the model of physical and psychological health. All the time I was taking notes in her health history, I wondered what had induced her to make an appointment with me, a stress management expert. She seemed to have it all, and believe it or not, shrinks sometimes do envy their patients. What could possibly be bothering her? Finally, I asked her why she'd come to see me. Her answer floored me. "Because every time I open a drawer or closet and see the clutter, I feel like a miserable failure." From my perspective, Kim's life seemed pretty perfect, but that's not what she thought. As she told her story, I saw a woman who was successful, lucky, smart, healthy, and well-loved. But Kim only saw the mess in the closets and drawers. Kim's anxiety level was as high as that of someone with a diagnosable health condition or a major life stressor. She was as anxious as some of the patients I've seen with heart disease or who have been laid off from their jobs. But it was her doing. The problem was in her mind. The only thing wrong with Kim's life was how she looked at it. Her cup was quite full, but the clutter in her mind made it feel half empty. She couldn't enjoy her nearly perfect life because she couldn't get past the small, imperfect parts. I wrote this book because Kim's story was so striking to me. I think about her all the time because nearly every patient I see does what Kim did, and what I do too. We judge ourselves more harshly than we would ever judge someone else. We bring high expectations to our roles, and we're terribly hard on ourselves when we don't live up to them. We feel like failures, and we allow that feeling to color the way we look at ourselves and our lives. We torture ourselves over forgotten homework, wrinkled clothes, and too many nights of takeout. We let our few slip-ups overshadow our many accomplishments. It's fine to want to be a good parent or keep a clean house or do an excellent job at work. There's nothing wrong with aiming high. It doesn't mean you have psychological problems. But if your expectations are so high that they detract from your quality of life, and if you can't be happy unless everything is 100% right, it's time to stop judging yourself and start appreciating what's going right in your life. This book will show you how to do that. I've been working with women my entire career. My goal has always been to reduce their stress and help them be healthier physically and psychologically. I've battled perfectionism all my life, and even though I teach and counsel women about it all the time, I sometimes continue to struggle with it myself. During my 20 years of clinical practice, I found it incredibly hard to convince women to take care of themselves. This baffled me when I first started seeing patients. I knew that self-care and stress reduction produced solid, measurable medical results. Consider migraine headaches as an example. If you take a group of women who get migraines and teach half of them how to do mind-body stress reduction and self-care techniques, they'll inevitably feel better and get fewer headaches than the women who don't learn how to do the techniques. The same is true with pretty much every health condition out there, from heart disease to anxiety to chronic pain. So picture me 20 years ago launching myself into the clinical world full of ways to educate women about how to make themselves feel better. I began teaching patients a range of skills and was thrilled to see physical and psychological improvements in the women who incorporated these techniques into their lives. But I discovered something else too. Although my patients were willing to come in and learn these skills, many of them didn't practice them when they left the clinical setting. It didn't make sense. They knew a variety of simple, proven ways to feel better, but didn't use them. After delving into this mysterious problem, I realized that part of what held women back was guilt. They felt guilty setting aside time to meet their own needs. They saw meditation, mini relaxations, mindful walking, yoga, journaling, social support, and all of the other proven techniques as being selfish acts because of the time they would take away from their families. Many of my patients considered self-care to be selfish, even when there was proof that it would improve their mood and their health, and by extension, their family's happiness and well-being. But women are held back by more than just guilt. I give dozens of talks every year about how women can nurture themselves, and women attend in droves. I even wrote a book on it called Self-Nurture, which was a bestseller. Women approach me after reading my book or hearing my talks and tell me wholeheartedly that they love the idea of self-nurturance, but they have trouble implementing it. It's hard to spend time with your friends when the laundry isn't done and the sink is full of dishes. Finally, I understood what was causing the disconnect between these women's thoughts and actions. It isn't just that women feel guilty taking care of themselves. It's that deep down, they feel that setting aside time to meet their own needs, even having needs, in fact, is a sign of weakness or failure, a sign of imperfection in a world that expects nothing less than perfection.